Good afternoon. Hope you're all enjoying your lunch. My name is Anna Marie Evans. I'm a freelance journalist in Hong Kong and a member of the Board of Governors. Before we allow our guest speaker up today, three upcoming talks that you might be interested in. The first is Putin's media. Can government finance journalism be independent? That's actually Eugene Abov, who's the deputy chief executive of the Rossiyskaya Gazeta. And this is in relation to the fact that, of course, Vladimir Putin will be making his presidential bid again next week. And it's talking about also the hundreds of millions of US dollars that's been pumped into advertising Russia since 2000. And that's on February the 27th, so Monday the February 27th at 12:45. The other one is Wednesday, February the 29th, another lunch. And this is the Global Economic Prospects 2012, Uncertainties and Vulnerabilities. And that's our speaker will be Hans Timmer, who's the Director of the Development Prospects Group of the World Bank. And he will be presenting the bank's assessment of the current turbulence in the global economy. We've also got a very interesting film coming up, and that's on Thursday, March the 1st, so that will be an evening appointment at 7:15 next Thursday, March the 1st. And that's Mike Chinoy, of course, CNN's former Beijing bureau chief. He's now the senior fellow of the US China Institute, University of Southern California. And this is based on the week when Nixon went to China in 1972, the week that changed the world. But rather than looking just at the official material that we all know, it's looking at some of the reporters, so behind the scenes. And of course, many of the American reporters' names you'll know still today as they covered Nixon's visit to China. Our speaker, Albert Ho, will be talking in just a moment, but if I say that at the end, it will be ample time for questions at the end, and we'll take the microphones around, so if you could wait till you've got a microphone, and then also announce your name and who you work for. So just in relation to the chief executive election 2012, I just want to say from a personal perspective, a couple of months ago I was reading the news at RTHK, and it was just at the time when Rita Fan was dithering, and so was Regina Rick. And the bulletins read something like this, you know, Rita Fan had discussed over a cup of tea with reporters whether or not she might indeed decide whether she was indeed standing for the chief executive. And then the next bulletin would be something like Regina Rick basing her decision on whether to become chief executive, not on whether Rita Fan would stand. But, you know, and on it went. And I remember thinking at the time, as I was reading this inane stuff out, I was thinking, when is this story ever going to get going? Well, I needn't have worried. Now, there's so much colour to this election that even Silvio Berlusconi would be proud. Now, there's been mudslinging and backstabbing. But one candidate who seems to have escaped all of that is our speaker today, Albert Ho, until now. So, Albert, for the sake of full transparency here at the FCC, can you answer honestly into the microphone? One, do you own a jacuzzi?
Okay, you can ask all the questions. Quite answered.
Number two, does your wife have a magic door to Narnia in your flat that you're not allowed the keys for? And number three, any secret love child stashed away?
Wow.
Here, quite seriously, to talk about Hong Kong's core values, please give a warm welcome to legislator, solicitor, leader of the Democrats, and chief executive candidate for 2012, Albert Ho.
Well, thank you very much, Anna Mary, for your exciting questions. Do you have any photos to show to us about the lovely lady and the lovely child? Now, if we don't have that, that means that there is no prima facie case for me to answer, right? So then I will exercise my right of silence. I think that is the safest way, neither to confirm nor to deny it. Okay, that is the safest way. But anyway, I know that, you know, there would be continued mudslinging in the times to come. Well, fortunately, at the start, I think in October last year, when I declared my intention to seek candidacy in the CE election, well, I made it quite clear in an honest and serious manner that I have no wishful thinking that I would be successfully elected at the end of the day. No, that looked a little bit silly for one, you know, to join the race with such a mindset. But at least you can see the wisdom behind it. I can avoid all the mudslinging now, right? But apart from that, of course, I say this, you know, in a very serious manner, because obviously, this CE election is not a genuine election. It is, in fact, an appointment exercise under disguise. I have to say that, in all honesty. You see what is happening quite recently. If Henry Tang doesn't got the blessing from Beijing, I don't think he would have the guts and the courage to continue to run the race, right? And you see, whenever something happens, you will see all those pro-establishment candidates sneaking into the office of the Central Liaison, you know, into the building of the Central Liaison office, during daytime or nighttime, to spend hours in secret meetings. So what is happening? So the inevitable conclusion is that, you know, this is entirely a game that is dominated by Beijing, and the result would be dictated by Beijing. I have to say this. And that is the purpose of my joining the race, is to expose all this. Now, I got my own mission, and I will seek to achieve certain goal in joining in this, I would say, farcical exercise of selecting the chief executive. Firstly, as a member of the Pan Democracy Camp, the Pandem Camp, we got to seize every opportunity, seize every available platform to continue to demonstrate our continued determination and commitment to strive for democracy, particularly we must try to fight for the realization of true universal suffrage for electing chief executive, the latest in 2017, and all the national members in 2020. We are fighting for that, and we must make use of this opportunity to try to force all the other candidates and also the incoming CE to show their view, to express their view, and to show commitment to ensure the public that the forthcoming election must be genuine. This necessarily means that the nomination of the CE, if the CE were to be elected on universal suffrage in 2017, as permitted, as shown to be permissible by the decision of the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress in 2007, there is one important factor that we all have to bear in mind, namely the nomination process must be fair, must be open, must be inclusive, so that candidates from different political parties, of different political persuasions can join the race. Now, this is essential. And secondly, by 2020, all the electoral members shall be elected on universal suffrage, and by that, all this should mean that all functional elections shall be abolished. Now, this is the key objective that we must try our best to secure an answer in the coming debate. And all the more, in the times to come, we have to fight for a one-off legislation to put all this in place so that we know how we are moving forward. Now, this is the most important point that I have to make in the coming debate. And of course, you know, by joining the race with the support of the pandemic camp is part of an ongoing campaign for democracy. So there would be, I can tell you, continued actions in the street, in the community. There will be continued engagement in the electoral and at all levels to ensure that genuine, true democracy shall be put in place, you know, by this timetable, 2017 and 2020. Now, this is the first goal. Secondly, the purpose of my joining the race is to show the unity of the pan-democracy camp. Although we all know that this is an exclusive exercise in that only 1,200 members in the small circle election committee can vote, but one of our goals in joining this race is try to gain some experience in organizing a primary election among all the pan-democracy candidates. Initially, there were two persons, including myself, who have indicated an interest to stand in this election from the pan-democracy camp. Now, we know that we have to stand united. Not this year, not particularly this year, but most importantly, in 2017. We got to have one candidate from the pan-democracy camp, okay, to offer as a viable candidate and to offer an alternative government in the election. We can't afford to split. We can't afford to be divided if we really got a chance in 2017. So that's why we need to gain experience in organizing primary to ensure that we know how to sort out the differences and then find one candidate to run the election under the banner, one banner. And of course, by that time, we have to run with the cabinet. And I anticipate that if we have any chance of winning, then we have to prepare for ruling Hong Kong by a coalition government comprising the various political parties in the pan-democracy camp. So in other words, you've got to be united. We don't have sufficient talents or resources to be sourced in one party. So we've got to be united. We've got to offer a coalition government. We ought to offer a cabinet next time. Okay? But before we can go to that, we need to have a primary. So that's why this time we organize a primary, and with the support of the academic in Hong Kong U, we run this primary with, you know, electrical devices by this iPad, and we are very encouraged to have quite a successful result in that we have engaged about 3,000 Hong Kong U students, and they took part in organizing this primary, and we have at least staged about 70 voting stations, mobile voting stations over Hong Kong, and there were 35,000 citizens coming out to vote. Okay, so it's, I would say it's immensely successful in seeing that people try very hard to try to engage, to take part in it, and that the pandemic parties have stood united, and that is very encouraging. And that paved the way for us to prepare ourselves in unity in the time to come, in particular, get ourselves prepared for 2017. Now, thirdly, now this is very important, our nomination. I have mentioned to you about the importance of our nomination. There have been a lot of worries and concern that the nomination committee to be set up under the basic law before 2017 would be structured in such a way as to screen out politicians of the opposition party. Now that is the most worrying aspect, because the nomination committee has yet to be worked out as to how it is going to be structured. If by 2017 we can only have candidates from the pro-establishment camp, then even though it's one person, one vote, we won't accept that this is genuine democracy, because there is no competition, meaningful competition between the pro-establishment candidates and those from the opposition. Now, in 2009, and you can remember that Alan Leung, on behalf of the Civic Party, he stood for the election. He got himself successfully nominated. But this time, I also got myself successfully nominated. So at least we can benchmark that that the present threshold is reasonable, or at least it's not unreasonable, okay? Because, you know, 2008, 2007, 2012, we had candidates from the opposition camp. So don't tell me that by 2017, you know, it's too bad for the pandemic candidates. They are so poor in quality, they can't get into the race. Okay, then there must be something wrong with the structure. So benchmarking the threshold is important. So that's why I work hard to mobilize people in various sectors, including, you know, the social workers, the teachers, the lawyers, the accountants, to run to show that this is important. That we got to show that that at least the present threshold should not be restructured in such a way as to make it more difficult. So this is another advantage. This is another goal that we have already managed to achieve, namely showing that nomination is important. We got to pay a lot of close attention as to how the nomination committee is going to be structured in the time to come. Now, finally, by this election, we would also like to demonstrate our vision and our competence in offering ourselves as a viable alternative to the present government. And this, we try our best to show that we have a very comprehensive election platform. Now, all this are on the internet. But very unfortunately, up to now, most of the reporters are not really interested in the election platforms. Not particularly about me, but even about Henry Tang and C.Y. Leung. You know, there has been some reporting, but compared with other reportings on this mudslinging, you know, and there is all this scandals, you know, it's hardly comparable. But of course, I'm looking forward to the forthcoming occasions where there will be open debate, and at least there will be two official debates to be organized, and I have been urging for the other potential candidates to join in forums for open discussion and interactive discussion on election platforms. But it seems that because of the nature of this small circle election, people know that platforms or programs are not really very important, because after all, you know, it's the 1,020 persons within this small circle who are going to decide. And out of this 1,200, many people believe, that, as I'm told, that Beijing has been controlled over 700 votes, 800 votes. You know, so they have a very high safety factor in seeing that the man chosen by Beijing would be elected. Now, personal integrity and credibility has now become an issue, like every other election. But if it is a universal suffrage, I think people facing such a personal, huge personal integrity issue would have to make a very hard decision to withdraw himself from the race. But unfortunately, you know, that is the situation in Hong Kong. We still have to wait as to see whether there would be some incoming candidates. You know, some of them are very interesting, like Jessica Zhang. He is obviously a very experienced politician. He was the founding chairman of the DAB. He has been the president of the ELECCO, so you know, he has some good knowledge about how the ELECCO functions in the past. And of course, you know, he has good relationship with the government. But of course, you know, the problem is everybody thinks, and I believe that they have reason also to believe that he is a member of the Communist Party. So that is the question that he has answered, you know, whether or not he is a CCP member. And because our law clearly prohibits that that CE prohibits the CE from having any party affiliation. And after all, he has to disclose it. Now that would become a question of the image of Hong Kong, the reputation of Hong Kong. But that is one question. And he is also wary, as he said the other day, that it would give public perception that the DAB would be very over-dominating. And then in the forthcoming political election in September, there's a lot of concern that there will be a swing back. DAB will have to pay a huge price for his decision. That sort of thing. But anyway, to me, I must make myself quite clear to avoid any misunderstanding. My only focus in this, in my job, as a candidate, is to clearly express the incessant demand of Hong Kong people for true democracy and for a more responsible and transparent government. I would put to all the candidates to answer the most sensitive questions about democracy, about preserving our core value, including the freedom of the press, the freedom of protest, the freedom of opinion, and to protect our high degree of autonomy. I will seek to challenge all the candidates to express their view as to whether the mainland officials should be criticized, you know, for interfering into the academic freedom of Dr. Robert Zhong in undertaking his opinion polls. You know, a whole lot of this sensitive questions would be raised during the debate, and I won't let any of them seeking to avoid it. That is my role. I'm not interested at present to see who would eventually emerge as the winner. I think, you know, from this, I won't have much expectation from the product of this small circle election, and I would like to see that this would be the last episode of this sort of absurd arrangement. And I think Hong Kong people, with all our, with Hong Kong is such a progressive, such an advanced society. We deserve a much better system than is the democratic system. And I so that is the whole purpose of my, you know, that is the most important message that I will bring out and continue to sound out in clear and loud in the coming debate. Okay, thank you very much.
Well, thanks to Albert Ho there. As said, the staff will be bringing round microphones, so if you'd just like to raise your hands if you'd like to ask Albert Ho any questions, and if you could say who you are and who you work for as well. So if people have got any questions, please.
So, Albert, do you think CY can win?
I think only people in Beijing can tell you the answer. It's difficult to foresee the ultimate result. There has been lots of suggestion that an important decision has to be made when the deputy president, Mr. Xi, who is entrusted with the ultimate authority of overseeing the Hong Kong Macau affairs, is going back to Beijing, and he would be making the final decision. Now, let me tell you something about credibility crisis. Most people would find it difficult to accept that he would have the credibility to leave Hong Kong. I think there would be a strong reaction. I think it's obvious. But Mr. Leung has also to answer questions about his involvement in the West Calgary concept plan competition. You will remember that he was a member of the panel of judges, but eventually it was found that one competitor who managed to get into the final list was eventually disqualified because that competitor has disclosed that CY Leung was their property consultant. Now, people have taken CY to task for failing to disclose it, but he said that it didn't come to his notice because there had been a lot of this routine inquiries made with his firm about this sort of price quotation, you know. But it is quite incomprehensible, and he would say that it's quite difficult to believe when the firm is being asked a question about West Kowloon, about the premium to be paid for the West Kowloon project involving over $20 billion. And that premium is in relation to hotel, commercial, and residential complexes. It's a very, very complicated question. And I don't think it's, you know, anybody apart from the most senior members of the firm would be able to answer it. And I don't think any people would care to answer it if you don't know who is on the other side of the phone. And you won't even start to think about it if you don't sit together and seek more information and then give a careful consideration before you give an answer. So this is not a sort of day-to-day mundane, you know, inquiries. So he's still got a lot to answer, but you know, for the time being, you know, he enjoyed the benefit of the doubt. But tomorrow they will disclose a more discovery of a document about this West Carbon project. So very important. You know, all of them have question to answer. I don't know when would become my turn. You know, when some photographs, you know, were provided, but I'm relevant for the time being, fortunately. But for all these people, they have to answer. And Jesuit Zhang at one time told the public humorously, of course, you know, I have made my mistake, I have my own problems, but I got to face the music. So that's it. CY is possible. He got a high popularity rating in terms of support, although it appears that many big businessmen, prominent members in the election committee are not supporting him. And I was told that because of this mud-slinging campaign, the two camps, the Leung camp and the Fong camp, has become very divisive. And so that is the situation.
Any other questions?
Tom Holland from South China Morning Post.
Mr. Ho, you point out that your overriding aim is to campaign for a full, free, fair election in 2017 with an open field of candidates. If we assume, and it's a big assumption, that you get that, what will the Democrats stand for then? Or what will you campaign for once you've given everything you're asked?
Of course, we got our own programs with regard to economic, social, cultural policy. I published quite a booklet containing all this. And all this, actually, every time when I attended this forum, I faced extensive questionings on each area's of policies, you know, ranging from cultural policies, planning, you know, medical, education, social welfare, so on and so forth. Now, we have our blueprint for the future. But unfortunately, in this campaign, up to now, I would only say up to now, people are not really so interested. But maybe in the debates, you know, there would be focus on these areas. But we are getting ourselves prepared, and we have to put together our election platform and for more interactive communication with different sectors. Now, one advantage that I think I have derived from this exercise is that in the last 3 weeks, I have attended so many of these conferences and forums that I managed to get into contact with many people of different sectors. Okay, and I've been confronted, I've been challenged. And then of course, you know, I encounter them with my answers, and I think that is important. Engagement is important. Now, so my short answer to the question is, we have to continue to engage. Our party has to continue to face, you know, interaction, face all sorts of inquiries, all sorts of questions, even all sorts of challenges from people who think that we are inexperienced of running an administration. Now, of course, that is a legitimate concern, but we got to face it. An interaction, interactive communication is important.
Perhaps you could give us a flavor of your policies. I mean, if we take, for example, Hong Kong's property market, housing prices.
I mean, what would you do? Okay. How would you address what is clearly a cause for concern among a huge number of people?
Okay, good. Now, actually, those to the property, the land policy, and in fact, one of the my campaign theme is to express my deep concern over the hegemony of big land developers. Now, I have offered a range of programs with regard to a more rational and comprehensive land and housing policies to be put in place. That, first of all, I have made it quite clear that we would not allow any favoritism to be displayed by government towards
big business land developers and business landlords. Now I say this because in the past there have been examples of this unfair transactions to certain developers. One glaring example is the Cyberport project, okay, which is offered to Richard Lee without tender, and there was a lot of complaints. There were a lot of complaints from the developers association. And then the West Kowloon project, the government once thought that it could be done by way of a single tender for the whole West Kowloon project. But eventually, because of their so strong oppositions, they then abandoned it. But still, you know, this is something that we have to be very concerned to see that it must be fair. And then, of course, you know, there are some other examples. Now, this is one thing. So to prevent collusion, to avoid suspicion of unfair advantage is important. Secondly, constant and more supply of land should be a policy. Now, in 1996, when the Housing Bureau was headed by was headed by the then Secretary for Housing, I forgot his name just now. There was a long-term housing strategy in Hong Kong, in that the government would always seek to accumulate land reserves for at least 5 years, such that the government would be in a position to control how much land should be put into the market every year. Okay, so they had accumulated reserves for at least 5 years. So they continue to form and accumulate land for this purpose, such that the government would be in a position to play an active role in the market, to make sure that when the market is facing huge deflationary pressure, that the government would, you know, maybe tighten up supply for the time being. But when there is a bubble, you know, clearly emerging, that the government can supply more land. So this measure to prevent, you know, to counter what we call economic cycle is important. Now, one other thing is all this big land, there has been suggestion that it's too big. It's only catered for big developers. So there is suggestion that the land should be cut into smaller pieces so that there would be more competition within the sector of land developers. There would be more competition, and then that sort of thing. Now, one other measure about land supply is the policy to revitalize many of the industrial buildings which are not put into beneficial use. And many of these are being used as temporary storage or even left vacant. Now, I think there should be more comprehensive and efficient policy to revitalize the use of these industrial buildings. One way is to facilitate the change of user, to modify the lease conditions, and to facilitate redevelopment if necessary. Now, so there's a whole lot of measure. Of course, you know, the last point I'd like to be to make is about the government's commitment to provide a certain percentage provide subsidized housing to ensure that those who are unaffordable would be given a reasonable subsidy. They can either get into the public housing flats alternatively, if they want to own their own flat, but they find it unaffordable to go into the private market, then the HOS scheme should be introduced and should be, you know, launched in such a scale as to make sure that it would facilitate the market give opportunity for the younger generation to acquire property and to climb up the social ladder. And so, you know, there's a whole lot of this sort of policies
him at the head.
My name is Nelson Tang, I work in the finance industry.
Yes.
Mr. Ho, let's assume if it's first round of election,
yes,
is the result in the majority and the second round of the election is required. And unfortunately, you're not part of the second round. How would you direct your constituents to vote in the second round?
Thank you very much, Nelson. Actually, many of my supporters, you know, these 20 supporters, has a very fanciful expectation that we will become the kingmakers, right? Because in the first round, you know, no doubt, or I will be kicked out. And then there will be, if the other two candidates, or none of the candidates, I'll put it this way, manage to get more than 600 votes, then under the law, there will be second round of voting. And then it's possible that our 200 odd votes would become the determining factor, right? If we swing our votes to either party, then we would make him the chief executive. But I can tell you, Nelson, this chance is extremely remote. And honestly speaking, I don't think it's going to happen. I think the chief executive would emerge upon the conclusion of the first round of voting. I think it's pretty clear. I don't think those in power would allow the pandemic election committee members to decide who is going to be the chief executive. And let us be in the position to impose terms on the possible candidate. I don't think that is going to happen. If the situation is so bad that nobody is found to be a viable candidate to become the next chief executive, then it's more likely that no one will get it. 600 votes, and eventually, they had all this election would be called off, and then there would be another election under the law, which is scheduled to be held on the 6th of May. But again, I think it's remote, frankly speaking. By the close of the nomination, I think the picture would be quite clear, you know, as to. Who is going to stand? Who are going to stand when Jesper Jung is coming in, or so on and so forth? I don't know. But very unfortunately, very regrettably, the decision is not made in Hong Kong.
Okay, thank you very much to Albert Ho. We just got a gift here. Oh, okay. Albert.
Yes, Emma.
Put your cards on the table. What's your prediction for the voting?
What's the prediction, the voting before?
The election. Or the
appointment
process.
I'm not a prophet, and I'm not keen in predicting. And it's difficult to predict, frankly speaking. I won't rule out the possibility of either the wolf or the pig in the winning of the election. I don't know that, actually. But I know that the pet little boy is not going to win.
Thank you.
I drank God knows how much vodka, way too much wine, without my diet, a chocolate, although I was just a part of one of our, really went off the wagon, found myself having acid reflux last night around 2 o'clock in the morning, took me till just a minute later. You got to talk over here.
Yeah.
So, I'll wait for you. So, I'm